Once again, after a few technical issues, welcome Mikael, CEO of Estate Guru. Thanks a lot for joining today's podcast and the conversation surrounding the real estate market as well as current developments on Estate Guru. Thanks for taking the time. To start off, maybe you can give a general statement on how you currently observe the real estate market and the environment as we have it right now.
Yeah, hello. Hello to all of the listeners as well. So yeah, what I can say about general real estate market is that it has definitely declined compared to maybe year or especially one, maybe even additional 1 year ago. But it's not hasn't been as drastic maybe what we even thought at one point. So for example, in Lithuania, we saw like 12% decline in real estate market sales compared to the year before. However, at one point, maybe in thought that, okay, maybe it goes even deeper dive. But currently, we see that it has stabilized and there are even some areas where some growth is seen. So definitely what we see in secondary deals are happening. There's a need for this ready-made apartments, which will be distributed. At one point also we saw that actually developers put on hold some of the projects, so now they are a little bit starting again. So when we look, for example, when we look even our own platform, then yes, the demand from the borrower side, so developer side, has remained, but probably a little bit the product type has changed. But still, in some areas we see longer sales processes. It takes more time to exit the deals or to even develop. So this is definitely affecting also the overall market. Mm-hmm.
How do you see increasing interest rates caused by central banks in recent months? How do you see this impacting the development of Estate Guru?
It has several sides. Of course, it kind of, on one side, you see also increase of deposits and all of these different other investment vehicles, which kind of gives more opportunity for investors to look into the market. But at the same time, we also see that in some cases or in some markets, interest, we don't have any Euribor included to our rates when we lend out the money to the developers. So actually, in some cases, the rates are quite similar to also to banks in some other times. And this gives us also opportunity to have choose more of borrowers in today's market.
Mm. Yeah, I had a similar assumption. So probably it makes Estate Guru a little bit more competitive in the fight for borrowers, since the interest rate that you offer is mostly unchanged, I would say, whereas like the proper bank financing rates have increased. So I'm guessing there's a bit more competitiveness now with Estate Guru, right? Mm-hmm.
One side is competitiveness, but also still, I think when you look at the overall macroeconomic situation, I think banks today still are also really conservative when lending out the money. So, but still there are, as I said, a lot of opportunities in the markets where actually developers want to finish their projects or even start with the new ones.
Hmm. How would you say that inflation is impacting the business development of the platform?
Again, I think there was a period where especially the war started, we saw the prices of all the materials, everything going up, and therefore making it even more expensive for developers to develop. But there has been also stabilization here. So I think this is not an issue anymore so much for the developers, also connecting to energy prices, so all of this has kind of stabilized. So inflation probably mainly still influence more of the investment side in such way that how much actually people, because how it affects the people is that especially the retail clients, they have even now prices are going up in shops. I don't know what you buy every day. You go to take a meal, travel, everything is much more. So we have less actually maybe resources to save. But again, I see also differences compared to regions, even in Europe. So when you look, for example, Baltic, Finland, you have a higher inflation here and lower in the western part of the Europe. So this also affects actually the behavior of the customers.
Now, you mentioned a good point, increase of construction materials, building houses. I'm assuming that for borrowers, you know, one might assume, okay, in this, you know, let's say a bit more shaky time, they will be a bit more hesitant. But from your observations, also from the beginning, you feel like the demand is unchanged. So from borrower side, it didn't, you know, inflation didn't really impact the demand for building and constructing new apartments, new residencies, houses, etc.
What it affected definitely is that, like I said also earlier, is that we saw that there was a kind of there was a little bit less new projects started. So also developers kind of were looking like, okay, should I start or not? Can I sell these apartments in then? So they actually focused on maybe two things: finishing the existing ones, trying to get these, get the sales done, but parallelly. Also talking myself to different developers or architects or the parties involved in this cycle, they were also telling that actually what they're doing is still they're already preparing some of the new projects, but not starting to develop maybe that eagerly. But at the same time, there started to happen these secondary deals when, I don't know, some of the project didn't go as expected, and then somebody started to take these projects over and finish. So all of these cycles have a little bit different economics and way of the behavior of the customers at that point.
Okay. Let's switch to the performance of the current EstateGuru loan portfolio, a quite, you know, sensitive topic. You know, reviewing the numbers this morning, I saw that more than 40% already of the loan portfolio are in recovery at the moment. It's the worst performance in platform's history. Would you say that EstateGuru has failed its expansion?
I wouldn't say fail, but in some areas, yes. When we look Germany, then here I would say yes, that when looking at the overall portfolio, then this is definitely not the position we would like to be ourselves as well. We have expected always that when you expand to the new market, that there is some unexpectedness, that you enter a new market, you don't know fully, you developed your kind of credit rules, credit policies, adjusted to a little bit every market, and then you go in the new market and you need to a little bit adjust to the local market. For example, in Latvia, at one point when we entered, we also saw kind of defaults raising up to 20% or even above 20. Now we have, after being there for many years, we have now actually reached back to this 5% or 6% level of defaults. And this has been kind of doing two things, adjusting our credit rules, but parallelly learning how to work out with these problematic loans. So we have all the time kind of improved the process. So now we see also the benefits out of that. In Estonia, again, this was the first market where we solved our first defaults, and now we have actually below 5%. Levels in there. In Germany, if you look at the overall highest, like you said, 40%, then this is influenced by a couple of markets. So Germany, where we really had to take drastic decisions to stop the overall origination, which meant that actually portfolio is not many more growing, and parallelly going really aggressively of defaulting all of the loans, because what we learned is that compared to, for example, Baltic, where you can actually go to auction with 2 months, here you need to at least wait 6 months and then you can start to do the next step. So in order to go through the whole cycle, you need to be really quick and aggressive and in order to get results. So yes, Germany today definitely affecting the portfolio. And historically, we also have Finland with its old portfolio, which is with higher percent, and now we also saw one group going in default in Lithuania. So again, all of these countries have a little bit different story. As is, again, in Lithuania, you have a kind of overall smaller portfolio, like 40 million in total. So if some one group is going to default, it also affects the portfolio. So to conclude my story, we'll probably go a little bit more detail in this, is that also today we had a risk committee, which is kind of involves supervisor board level and all of the shareholders, where we review the most important topics. And the current best estimation is that by April, we see probably, and already actually now we see hopefully the highest defaults, and then step by step we start to come back down again. So our targets, at least for this year, is to keep the 5% level in Baltic in defaults, parallelly improve the Finland portfolio below 20%, and then get bigger recoveries in German portfolio. So there's a lot of effort going on into working. But we also need to understand it's not something that only entering into new markets, but it's also like the circumstances of the overall global economic. Like I said, in some cases you see the influence of longer sales periods, and also business plans not going as expected, and then it is a little bit different market what it was like 1 year ago.
But obviously we can see, since you were pointing out the differences in, you know, the different loan or borrow markets that a state guru have or has, that obviously there's a bigger issue, underlying issue in Germany. When I checked the numbers, as you rightly said, the majority of the recovery is, you know, deriving from the German situation, with more than 80 million now being in recovery, more than 90% of the entire German portfolio is in recovery. What would you say, which mistakes has a state guru been doing in Germany?
We have been already discussing it many times, but I would say maybe a couple of main topics. So, and learning also from the for going forward is that at that point, yes, we were in a growth cycle. We were aiming to go even more markets, and expected to have even bigger growth in all of the markets to reach the targets, which was strategy valid overall, what we were seeing in the market. But I think when now looking back, the speed of growth in Germany was too quick for the market. So we would have, if I would do now, and being now a CEO of the company, I would enter this with a more cautious. So do the first deals, then see how these perform, make adjustments, and then go again and increase step by step. This is an approach we are now also taking in a future outlook of German market. So we put a full stop in Germany. We are now dealing with the default portfolio, actually, like, let's say, making these investments, because our German market is a big cost for us to make these recoveries, and we are making like a lot of effort to that. Then parallelly, when we are able to reduce the defaults, then step by step we have actually parallelly reworking and analyzing what else we can do to improve the overall due diligence credit processes in Germany. And then once we are at a certain stage, we can kick off again with a couple of deals, and then see how this start to go, and based on learnings of them, increase. I still have a big belief in German market, a huge market, but we need to make it more conservative way when we go back in origination.
Yeah, I wanted to touch base on the future in Germany in a second, but before, I was curious, you said, like, obviously there was, you know, targets were too high or too ambitious, you know, the growth plans for Germany. I'm curious, like, who is setting those targets? Is it something that is shareholder driven, or is it something purely operational? I mean, before you becoming appointed as the CEO of a state group, you were also in a C-level position as a COO of the company. So who set the targets also for having a certain expectation for the growth in Germany?
It's a combination, I think. On one side, being a kind of a startup and going out in public and raising the money, you need to also kind of show the growth and be in growth cycle, but then in parallel also ambition of a team, kind of like, okay, let's go and show that we can increase the sales and increase the volume. So it's about was a combination of looking at that time, it was kind of alignment of setting the strategy that okay, we want to grow the overall portfolio of the company, expand to the new countries. So I wouldn't point out like single institution or person or something like this.
Mm. When there's a question of, you know, who takes accountability for the situation the platform is in, specifically in Germany, we saw that on the blog, you were also like mentioning investigations, internal investigations against the German staff members from 2020, 2021. What are the specific accusations that you have that are in the room, and what can you share about the progress of this of those investigations?
It's not about like internal, but it's what we're looking is we are looking the overall picture at that time, not only like is there any inside process improvement, but also like who were the customers being kind of worked at that period, how was the cooperation, how all of that actually happened, was there any intentional things done by them. But again, in the sake of not making any false acquisitions or giving out any sensitive information, we have promised and I am keeping this us accountable on that we once we can we will share more. So but it, the investigation involves yes internal people, but also we have used external audits to really understand the situation and then based on that to improve and do it differently.
Hmm. Can you confirm that there was no decision-making power from German staff members when it came to ultimately thumbs up or thumbs down which projects, you know, get financed and, you know, are basically funded through the platform?
We are still following, yes, this four principle that there's a separation of tasks. So there's a in our process, we have initial level, which is kind of a loan manager who are originating the deals and doing the initial due diligence, and then second, it goes to the separated credit committee, who then reviews and gives the decision on either to go forward or not. So, and depending on the size of the deal, there might be even like an additional level of confirmation of it. Okay, let's proceed.
Mm-hmm.
And then parallelly, there's a kind of a monitoring part as well, because we, like I said, we have risk committees separate from the credit committees who are reviewing the overall process. We are giving the management is giving the overviews to the supervisory board, which is an independent body of stakeholder management. So there are different layers. We have kind of set ourselves up today as a let's say more as a traditional financing company or even a bank.
Hmm. Can you talk about the recovery forecast specifically in Germany? So what are you looking at in certain timelines, let's say until the end of the year, in the next 2 years? So what is the internal forecast for the recovery in Germany?
First loans, as I said, there's a 6-month waiting period when you can actually, if you want to go auction, you can really first time you can go. So first loans are now entering that period. So we sent out terminations in end of last year and a little bit before that with the first ones. The more extensive termination started in the beginning of this year. So there's still time where this happens. But parallel, we're working actually with some other strategy as well. So to really recover them. But what I have said also to the team is that I want to see first successes already in next months, and hopefully we can deliver that. And then parallelly, bigger recoveries, if they start to come, then second part of the year, and this process will, depending on overall economical, macroeconomical situation, but also how effective we are, can take, maybe in some cases, even years to come to get them solved.
Mm.
So yes, hard to fully give a number, because what I can say is that in average, in other markets, we have seen that around 12 months of average recovery time. And in these markets, we have also seen that after this 1 year, we have been able to recover with revenues. So the average, I think, was around 6 to 8%. So yes, for the investor, it means that you wait longer. You are not liquid. You can't basically access money if you don't go to secondary market and sell it. But in the end, there's still, and this is the strength of our product, is that you have some collateral as a protection. So if you are able to sell it, then you are recovering the money. How long it will take in Germany, as I said, the base numbers are already different than what they can say. Yeah, you know, if it's in other markets around 12 months, then definitely 12 months in average will take also in Germany, but probably more, because this is still the new market for us, and this is still where the aspects are taking also longer time.
Mm. But can you share any specific KPIs, let's say until the end of the year, 50% are being recovered, or numbers of that nature? Is there anything that you can share?
Yeah, like I said, internally for Finland, we want to bring out below 20 in the Baltic, to keep it 5% level, in Germany also. First recoveries already, and then probably at least half. But this is, I can't kind of fully say this is going to be happen, but we are really driving for that. I'm like realistic as well, and we are not fooling ourselves. Our success with our investors is to show, if we want to kind of win and keep the trust of our investors. And I'm fully understand the frustration also from investors that, okay, if I go and see basically half of my portfolio or even more defaulted, then I'm not really eager to invest more. For us to be successful, it's about making these recoveries. Without them, it will be difficult for us to kind of, I don't know, start off like doing something in Germany more. Hmm. So this is a critical KPI. As I said, we have actually several work groups working on. We have constant meetings with the board, with the management, with the risk teams. We have actually included 4 different law offices to work out the German portfolio. So a lot of effort going in. And this actually is currently one of 3 top priorities for our management and our team to put the most effort in.
Hmm. To close off the topic of Estate Guru in Germany, I want to know, like, how you personally see the future in the German market. Now, you forecasted that, you know, it's not an infinite termination of doing business in Germany. So at one point, you want to continue doing business in Germany as well. Is that correct?
Yes, and I think after all of the learnings that we now go through, then I think we will have a lot of knowledge how to work in German market. So it's expensive training for us, but to take something positive out of that is something that we will know a lot of ways how to recover the money in Germany. And where to keep loan.
Yeah, the question is going to be if, you know, the trust of investors is going to be recovered equally for them to fund also then German real estate projects in the future. Let's have a bit of a more broader global look on EstateGuru. Now, I was reviewing the numbers for the first quarter 2023. Overall, the platform financed 23 million euros. The last time there was fewer loans financed in company history was in 2019. Where does EstateGuru go from here? So where do you see the growth potential? Which markets do you see like to fuel the growth again for the platform?
Yeah, we have defined this year as a stabilization year for us. When last year was a growth year, then we made adjustments to our business model. So we are currently focusing on our core markets, so Baltic, Finland, and also then the Germany. This year, we're not looking for expansion. So we are focusing on, as I said, one of priorities is working on the defaults, but parallelly, we use this time to really work on our core process on the background to automate, to standardize them even further, to make the product better for our customers, investors, and borrowers. So we still aim this year around 160 to 180 million of sales total. We want to go from there, continue growing profitably and sustainably. So yes, in our longer term vision, we keep the Europe open for us. We want to continue growing to the new markets. We will evaluate how we go there and what will be the markets. Step by step, yeah, in upcoming years, so we will come back to the expansion topic as well. But from this year, yes, as I said, we changed the business model. We are now aiming for profitability for this year, use this to go further.
Hmm. Interesting. That also is a smooth transition to the last topic I wanted to discuss, which is the financial situation of the company. Now, you said like profitability is targeted for this year. The last public numbers that are like official or that also publicly available, 2021, where you drove a loss of about 2 million euros. EstateGuru has invested a lot of money and a lot of resources into the expansion. Now, obviously going a step backwards, which ramification does this have for the company as a whole? Because I would assume with, you know, a funded loan volume, which will be definitely below the levels of 2021. And it seems like also very likely 2022. It apparently comes along with ramifications in terms of cutting costs on other areas quite heavily, I would assume. So where do you see the financial situation of the company right now? Is there maybe a funding round up and coming now? Maybe you can say a couple words on the financial side of the platform.
Yeah, we actually published a blog about this as well. So actually, we made this cost changes, and this was also stated in an annual overview. So we have been like profitable early as well. So we always have kept the profitability nearby, so that if we need to, we can switch back to a little bit different operating model. So 2 years, yes, we have been getting like extra equity in, being open also for external investors. We went to the seeders, raised also from retail customers extra money that they can also take part of the journey of EstateGuru. This money was used to, yes, big part of this went to the expansion. I would say that it's kind of not lost money, because expansion means also a lot of legal preparations for the new countries and understanding and setting everything up. So we have actually done this, and we will say that this is now put on hold. And it's not kind of going to be wasted, because once we, as I said, once we start to expand again, we can take it off from the shelf and then go for it. One part of this was also like all of this IT investments, which is now already set in our core and already kind of working for us. So we have a little bit also maybe reduced external IT usage and all of that. So the main change, also in structure and cost cutting, was that we kind of readjusted to our core markets. We have now, I see that we have a strong team to cover the existing markets to work also. We have added extra resources to this risk and legal part to work out with the portfolio part. So we are in a good position. And actually already in February, we saw a profitable month. So we are actually getting there. So this year will be already a different course than what it was last year. And parallelly, we actually increased our capitalization as well with our existing shareholders. So they committed to extra money, and this money is also in our accounts now. And so we feel that we are in good position, but definitely we need to continue working hard to keep the investment levels, get the repayments, which have been done actually quite well in this month. There's a stable flow of money coming back every month. So even yes, we have a kind of high share of defaults, but parallelly we see also that actually there are many projects that are coming on even earlier in some cases, and they are coming back on month-to-month basis. So this is like a general situation where we are, and the more success we have with our defaults recoveries, and also probably when we are a little bit influenced today on again, as I said, the overall investment environment. So if all of this changes, then there's we are in good positions to at one point grow quicker and go into that mode. Mm. Even with like self-funded growth.
Mm. Any staff that had been laid off as a consequence?
Yes, this happened in the end of last year. We also communicated, but this was also the part of the restructuring where we, as I said, we don't focus anymore on expansion, and also restructured our marketing and IT side.
Hmm. Can you talk numbers, like how the staff reduced then?
Maybe too detailed even, but we were over 100 people, and now we are below 100, so this is more.
Mm. Okay. And beside cutting costs, obviously you can also increase the revenue by, you know, looking at different sources, different revenue sources other than just the commission fee from the borrowers. And there, Estate Guru has now increased the transaction fee to 3% on the secondary market. You feel like it has been a necessary change now, because my perception is many investors are not really happy about this decision of first, you know, the performance issues of the loan portfolio, and now for them to exit, it becomes even more expensive, which then in return lowers the interest. Can you talk about this decision very quickly, please?
We were a little bit adjusting our price list in a couple of areas, but with the secondary market, also what we are planning to do to make it actually more attractive is we are adding this, some of the features there. For example, today it's not that easy to find deals when it's kind of discounted, somebody has discounted. So we make, for example, simple change will be the filter that because we have also seen that there are actually today investors who are actually really actively taking part of this secondary market to find these maybe discounted deals and hope to make some profits out of that when we recover the loans. So this is one strategy that we have seen. So to make it easier, and also we are increasing the discounted rate if somebody wants to exit earlier or quicker, then this is definitely one potential for them to do it. But the change of 2 to 3, it was overall review of the price list. So, no bigger comments on that.